Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, guys, welcome to Cast and Crank Podcast. We have our next episode with some real legends. We got Jimmy Decker.
Thank you.
And Eric Landisfine.
Hi.
And we got our co-host, as usual, Justin McTeer.
How's it going?
So, where should we start, man? You guys got so much knowledge between the both of you.
I'm going to let Jimmy start because he's older.
I don't care. The stock questions, I guess, here every week.
Or you could let's talk about just how you started, got into fishing.
Oh, okay. You know? I was very fortunate in that I was the first grandson, so I immediately took off with my grandfather from the age of three and started fishing with him. He had a he had a skiff in Newport Beach, and then over the years of my childhood, I grew up to be like a 33-foot Owens Brigantine was his last boat. But when I was growing up, I was with him fishing constantly.
Awesome.
You know, and it fell off and came back and fell off and came back, you know, throughout the years. But that's pretty much how I got my start. Drop lining off the swim step.
Awesome. You know? Yeah, definitely. And how about you, Eric?
When I was a grew up in Downey, which is nearby, and I used to go fish at Wilderness Park, which is a little public lake there, and caught my first fish there. It was just like a little guppy or something on, I don't even know what, probably in a bucket or something, but you know, my dad liked to fish, but my dad had a gun shop, and he was there every weekend, so he didn't have a lot of time to fish. So he would take me at night to the pier down to the rocks in Long Beach, fish there. Then when I got older, I started half-day fishing, and then when I was like in sixth grade, they would my mom would drop me off on Friday night, so I'd go out on the overnight boat, and my dad would pick me up Saturday afternoons and step on a Tornado out of Burr 55 before it went to Pier Point Landing. But funny, the way I actually got into working in fishing was after a few trips there, I realized that no one was checking my ticket. So instead of paying, my dad would give me $50 or $40, $30 for the kid's ticket and $10 for food. Yeah. I would just keep the money.
Yeah.
Buy a bunch of burgers, candy, and stuff on the boat. And then one day I won jackpot, and the deckhand's like, "You don't have a ticket to get on the boat." And I was like freaking out thinking I'm going to jail or something. You know? So they ended up just making me scrub the boat and come out for free from then on, which was really
awesome.
A good thing.
Yeah, man. So super cool. So, Jimmy, let's talk about when you got serious about calico bass fishing. You're a big piece of the, you know, pie with calico bass fishing. Let's hear about that.
I probably really didn't get into doing calico bass full speed until 2002-ish, right around there. You know, I was working a deckhand on the Thunderbird, got my ticket, second ticketed on that for a couple of years, went down to San Diego, worked with Mark Osmick and me on with Art, on one of Art Taylor's boats that first year that Bluefin Tuna came back, which was, what, 90-ish, 91? Does that sound about right?
91, 92.
Yeah, when that stuff was at like 85 miles and we were doing it on the overnight trips. And I got off of those two seasons and I said, I'm done. I'm hanging it up. I'm over this, you know?
Yeah.
And then after that, got into back to the roots of fishing Newport Bay, and then I started going out again on the Western Pride and fishing the calico bass off that, and then it started off, you know, 12-foot aluminum, 13-foot whaler, 17-foot whaler, 24-foot Skeeter, 24-foot Everglades, wow, where I'm at now.
Yeah, great.
You know, there wasn't a lot of guys doing it, you know. I mean, doesn't 18 years, 17, 16 years doesn't sound like it was that far long ago, but there's nobody out. I mean, you know, the old timers, you know, and that was about it. But there wasn't, you would go out there, you wouldn't see any skiffs on the kelp line or anything like that. Even yeah. when I started doing it, when I started guiding, I don't know when it was, 2007-ish, you know, there was me and Gardner, and that was pretty much it.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's amazing.
And now there's a lot.
That's how it works, man. Yeah, hey, thank yeah, God yeah. for Instagram. You seen, let's talk about that. You guys have been in this, you know, for a long time. So you've seen big changes. We've all seen big changes in different things. Music, you know, on our end a little more. Let's talk about how Instagram, you think, affected fishing. Because you think it's positive, negative?
There's both, I'm sure. I mean, there's things that I can't stand on it, you know. I can't not stand that end of the day, two or three guys standing on the deck of the boat holding their five or six biggest fish doing the grip and grin. I mean, that's just bullshit to me. If you want to take a picture of your fish, take it when you catch it, let it go where you caught it. Or if there are seals on, you tank it and take it someplace and release it. Because just from the amount of tournaments I've spent fishing tournaments, they don't live in the tank that well.
Yeah.
You know, and then plus you want to hold them up for God knows how many minutes to get your, cool, you know, your, look at, we got 22 pounds for our, you know, 17 hours at Clemente, you know, and how many of those fish die when they let it go?
God.
You know? I mean, I'm not ragging on any people. I mean, a lot of guys do it. I mean, yeah. you know, it's just that and just a lot of people think they're a lot better than they are. You know,
the last few years have made people really good fishermen who there are some really good fishermen. But there are some not really good fishermen who have been really good fishermen lately because it's so easy. And I think that the chest beating that goes along with that on social media is going to come around and bite him in the ass later. Really, you know, thank God there was no Instagram when I was 20 years old.
Yeah, that's all I could
say. Because there would have been big problems.
Yeah, hey, we're here with you right now. We're 39.
Yeah, I had a very small audience of people to be an idiot in front of. Yeah, these guys have thousands. You know what I mean? So
it's wild, dude.
People want to, you know, it's all part of self promotion and, you know, trying to help out what you foresee as your career in the fishing industry, which is a very, very small amount of people actually get to do. You know, but they figure they'll, you know, post enough pictures and get enough followers and this and that, that, you know, someone's going to pay attention and give them a reel or something, you know?
Yeah. I 100% I agree on that, you know, and just over I've been fishing, I say it over and over because we're on the show, but maybe 10 years, like serious, you know, my son, we got on a rod and that's how I got into fishing. Justin's been fishing his whole life. And even over those 10 years of me getting on Fishing Network to Instagram to this, it's like a completely different game. And I feel like a lot of the times people, you lose maybe a little bit of friendship or being nice to a dude when you see him, you know, because Instagram's so, you know.
The thing that Instagram took away from the community is the roots aspect of it, you know. There's no mm-hmm. more... Like Eric and I both did. I mean, I'm 60. Eric's a little kid, you know.
47.
Funny that we, you know, get along so well together. But
my grandfather.
We both grew up doing the same things. I mean, we both pinheaded on the half-day boat. We both pinheaded on the overnight boat. You know, we learned the ropes from the guys that were coming up way ahead of us. You know, we both can fly line an anchovy on 12-pound and a number 6 hook. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, he's probably one of the best jig fishermen I've ever fished with. You know, Eric is. And I've picked up a lot of stuff fishing with him. But, you know, you go on Instagram and these kids, they've never ridden an overnight boat or a party boat or had to fish the second row with 60 guys, you know.
Yeah.
And they're just like, you know, Dad, I want to Key West, you know, and then, okay, here you go, buddy. Here's your Key West for your high school graduation present.
Kids,
you know,
in Europe.
You know, it's a lot different. There's still a lot. There's a lot of little dock hoppers and rock walkers, you know,
definitely.
And that's really cool that's all coming back in. But it's that in between group that has that wants the instant, you know, I want it now. I want it now. You know, give me a jersey, give me a boat, you know, yeah. that kind of thing.
You know, adding on to that, you know, when I was a kid growing up on sport boats, and this is something I've had trouble with, you know, I'm going to share a story in a second here that just shows how out of touch I am with how things are now. But when I was a kid growing up, you'd be 14, 15 years old. You'd come out and scrub the boat. They'd let you have a cheeseburger, let you fish all day for free. Yeah. You'd work to be in a deckhand. But the deckhands would throw you in the water every day, be horrible to you, you know. Then when you're a deckhand, you're horrible to the younger guys, but you're also a good mentor to them and someone they can trust. You, yeah. They've always got your back, but they're going to pick on you and put you in your place if you get too big for your britches. Yeah. Nowadays, if you do that to a kid, throw him in the water, punch him or something like that. I mean, I was horrible. I was brought up on a horrible boat by horrible people, and I became a horrible person myself, and I'm not going to deny that. Yeah. I, you know, at one point, I sat in the galley of the Southern Cal and drinking a beer and told the pinheads to hold hands and throw themselves in, and they did, because they knew that I was going to come out there and hurt them and then do the same to them. It's terrible. That's how we grew up, you know?
Yeah.
And nowadays, kids don't do that, and I think that they don't have that tough love, if you can call it that, or they don't learn to respect for the people that are higher in rank than them, and you know, in the industry or whatever. So, but
all they have is this.
Yeah,
he's 24/7 face down in the fucking screen. That's all
hey,
you see.
I'm dealing with her. I got a 14-year-old, and I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
I mean, you see him on the boat.
Yeah,
you know, hey man, we're fishing. Oh, hold on, man, I'm almost done with this game.
Oh, like, I can't. I don't imagine what you got to go through as a guide.
Yeah,
because you get kids on there. Sometimes you're probably like. Do you make a rule
the
like
the adults
hey,
are worse?
Down.
Yeah, the kids are always psyched. You know, if I see that they're little phone guys, I'll usually have them drive the boat. Hey man, drive the boat.
Oh, cool.
You know, good here call, you go. Man. You're going like this. When dad starts trying to do emails in the back seat on the phone, I'm like, hey, you're gonna puke. You know, oh no, I'm fine. I'm okay. I just got a couple more emails. You know,
yeah.
And then you know, I go, hey man, you keep staring at your phone. You're gonna get sick. Yeah. You know, sure enough, you know, 10 minutes later, man, he's got his phone down, his head back. You got some water. I told you, you know, stay off that phone. You know,
yeah, but, that's the truth, man.
But it's been cool. I haven't guided much this year at all. There's just too much money to be made on the beach right now with the way the construction's going. You know, so. I've taken a little bit of a break, and I mean, I hate to say it, but I just don't miss it right now. You know, we do our fun fishing every Saturday. Eric and we did probably, I don't know, 16 months straight of every weekend we were out.
Not missing a single, most of it's like Clementi or tuna fish.
Clementi, tuna, marlin tournaments, whatever it was. And the thing about chartering, I mean, it's great, but like, you never know who's getting on your boat. They all talk. I mean, there's another Facebook, internet, whatever. They're all they're all professional anglers.
I can think of one in particular.
Yeah, they're all they all talk the talk, you know. And then you get them on the boat, and you're like, oh my god, you know, you never know what the weather's going to be like.
Yeah.
Fish are going to be biting. You know, you get done at the end of the day. It's like, oh hey, that's how much was that trip? How much is this trip again? It's like, oh well, I told you 15 times, it's $900.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, so I'll let Justin and Benny and all those other guys pick up all the slack, you know, for this year. And Jerry, I've been farming a lot of my trips off to those guys. And then when it slows down on the beach, or should I hit 62 and then I'm still kicking, I can pick it right back up. I have two or three clients that are really good clients of mine for the last 10 years that I've been fishing with. I take the time off of work, but other than that, it's just been
So do you guide and you'd have a full-time job?
I have a full-time job. I didn't have a full-time job until that new Ram Stadium kicked off.
Oh, really?
And then I started working out there. And then we're doing the new Gerald Desmond Bridge, downtown Long Beach, going over to Pedro. And then a bunch of the...
what do you do as your trade?
I'm a concrete pump operator.
Oh, awesome. Pumps. Yeah.
So
great.
I've been doing that pretty much my whole life.
Great.
Took 8 years off. And
do you run your own rig?
My boss has 15 rigs from 58 meters all the way down. I'm usually on one of the big pumps.
Awesome, dude. Great. How about you, Eric? What do you do?
Yeah,
do
you know, I do a lot of things.
you do it all, huh?
Well, you know, it's
Renaissance
man. Yeah, you know, I used to just have. I used to manage printing companies, and that industry's really gone in the toilet the last few years with the internet and everything else, budgets and all the other things. Advertising budgets went in different directions. So what I do now is I have found a way to actually, you know, my wife, Rachel, is a veterinarian, and she's someone who's doing something that she really loves with work, and I hated my job. And I, you know, I worked from home for years and I had good paying jobs, but I was miserable all the time. Yeah. And she's like, you got to stop doing this and find something you actually like to do. So now I write for several different magazines, websites, stuff like that. I also represent Navionics charting stuff. And then on top of that, I work as a business manager of a church, Catholic Church in Downey. It's actually one I went to school with as a kid. And I you know, getting there was a long story. If anybody knows me, that's an odd thing. But what that job does is it gives me a lot of flexibility. It's not really a full-time job, so I can take days off and go do, like Wednesday, I'm taking a day to go fish halibut for an article. Allows me to travel around, do stuff like that. So it's a combination of things I do to get by, but it works out good.
That's awesome, man.
And anybody that wants to work in the fishing industry, that's really what you have to do. You can't, there's not one, you know, everybody's like, oh, I'm going to get a big $50,000 check from a sponsor.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
No, we hear you, man. We do this for fun. So it turned into, like, in the beginning, a couple people listening to it's doing really good now, but a lot of work, man. Like,
yeah.
Thank God I had my wife talk me into building this room. We used to do a studio.
Yeah, it's nice.
And my kids play music. I played music my whole life. So I said, you know what? Sounds we just bought good. My son that Jackson right there that he wanted an American nice. Flag strap on. He's 8. I'm like, hey, bro, you Van Halen or what?
Right.
You know, like, so I'm like, whatever you want, dude. Like I said, this isn't a Christmas present. This is, you're not playing soccer, you're not doing anything else, you're playing music. But that's really cool. And the Navionics thing, the app, we just talked about that. I love that it's phone fantastic. App, man. It is so good. And I even watched, I think you did a seminar like a couple years ago on Calico.
Yeah.
I watched that even before, you know, I knew anything.
Yeah, I did 2 or 3 a year for them.
Yeah, very interesting, and it helped a lot. And that app has been, I mean, I have my GPS going, but a lot of the times I'm just like, give me my phone.
Oh, yeah.
Quicker just to look really quick on my phone, you know.
You know, it's a cool thing. You know, this is, you know, I know a lot of younger guys listen to this. A lot of younger guys are trying to get involved with companies and stuff. You have to be really careful. There's a lot of companies out there that are trying to get people involved with their company just for the sake of having grassroots marketing. Once you pick up a few companies like that, it gets harder to get a good one when it comes along. You know, when Navionics came along, I met with people. It seemed like a real good fit. I mean, it's a good company to work for.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're not going to get that if you're tied in with whoever for 20% off your next product. So that's one of the things to keep in mind for younger people. Definitely. I know that's something that gets talked about a lot on this webcast for the podcast when I listen to it. So I think Jimmy's pretty much the expert on figuring out how to make money as a sponsored angler. But
I think what you guys are pushing more is, like, it's cool. If you're younger, just go out and fish. Don't worry about getting a sponsor. Don't worry about...
You're not. I can tell you right now, you're not going to get a sponsor.
Exactly.
I mean, if you're talking sponsor where... you're going to get 20% off your next bag of worms. Yeah, exactly. You can probably pick that up.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at a job where they're going to cut you a quarterly check, your chances are extremely slim.
Yeah.
Extremely slim.
So a big question I have is, I know you hold some records on Lightline.
I did. I think they're pretty much all have all been knocked off.
What did you hold?
I had the 8-pound test sea bass record at 54-ish pounds, right in there, 54, 55 on 8. I had a 52-pound thresher on 4 that I got on 4-pound.
So I talked to Eric Ben about this, and he told me about this, and I'm like, oh, this is really fucking interesting. How do you rig it up? So he said you did something a little different when you rigged up the line onto the reel. Now, what's the rule for the white line?
The you're allowed 15 feet a leader. On anything under 20 or 20 feet under 20.
What can the leader size be?
It can be anything you want. But I think I was fishing like, I don't know, 20, 15, just with a double surgeon's knot. It's a real easy knot to tie mono to mono.
So
to.
You pretty much have to donkey that thing. Once you get in, you know you got it. Once you get a couple, somewhat.
Right. You if you couple, can get it that close. Yeah. If you can, if you're fishing enough that you can get the knot onto the spool, then you can put some heat on
then
it.
Then you know your money.
The sea bass, though, I only had about... 3.5 feet on, because I've been calico bass fishing all day. Chipped it all the way down, and then boom, that thing hit on the sink, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Then they a couple weeks now, it's probably like in the next moon cycle, we went out and tried to get, because that was the first time those big ones had shown up on the beach in God knows how long. I mean, that was that that 54-pound sea bass now is nothing. I mean, people don't even talk about
Yeah, you got one on the crankbait last year.
Yeah, I got one on the crankbait last year. It was nothing. But when I caught that fish, it was like, holy shit, 50-pound sea bass. You know, people hadn't seen them.
Yeah,
you know, dude, it was huge. Like right when that cycle started of the big coastal sea bass coming in. So I got a shit ton of press and all that for it. But that one was on a real short leader. The sea bass, I went out, I don't know, a month later and tried to get the 4-pound world record on live squid and hooked that stupid thresher shark. That thing took me forever. But got that to the bone. I was like, I don't want to take this thing. And my buddy's like, oh, you got to take that. It's going to be a world's record. You'll get them. You know, I was like, oh, I was kind of into that, you know, oh, see if we can get some world record type stuff. So we took that one. And then I looked through the book and I'm like, man, this fucking 4-pound calico bass on 4-pound tippet on the fly rods, nothing. It's like pound and a half. I went home, borrowed a fly rod, got a fly, went in the backyard, figured out how to get it more than 10 feet away from me without hitting me in the back of the head. Went to one of the spots that I like to fish, flipped it out there, donk, got like a 3.8 or something on 4-pound. So yeah. I had three at one time, but they've all been, those were long.
At that time, right, were you hunting for those records?
Yeah, I could have kept going, you know.
But that's what kind of you focused on, just like, let's go out.
I was really into light line fishing. When I very first started guiding on my 17 whaler, I fished 8-pound. Eight on everything. Wow. 8-pound mono before braid come out.
Yeah.
You know, 8-pound mono on swim baits, you know, and I had guys that were really into it, you know, I mean.
And that's just what you were fishing.
That's just what I was doing. That's
what you did.
You know.
That's cool, man.
You know.
Yeah.
After the sea bass, then my status in the company climbed dramatically, you know, and I started getting a lot more press, and then the gear started coming more, and then, you know, one thing led to another.
Now, both of you, do you like to go out and fish like I talked to Eric about? He likes to go out and he'll go fish lighter, mono, stuff like, do you guys do your finesse, anything?
We're
going so backwards from what we used to do. It's crazy.
And I think it's cool for people to share that because, I mean, like I said, I'm only 10 years into really fishing, a year into calico fishing, you know, serious. So it's cool to hear someone else's outlook on some older techniques that work great that no one does anymore because everyone wants to do this.
40 to 40.
Well, yeah, 65 to 60 pound. You know, it's funny. We went to fish Long Beach Harbor yesterday. I have an article in Sport Fishing Magazine.
Coming up.
And I built a 7-foot rod. I got into rod wrapping recently. I built a 7-foot bass rod that was, I'm like, oh, this is way too light. And then before we went out yesterday, I accidentally put the tip into the ceiling fan, knocked like 3 or 4 inches off it, and it was still a little light, but a little bit better once I got the tip bag on. But I was fishing a Zoom Fluke on 10-pound. He's fishing a Ned Rig on 12-pound on a spinning rod for sand bass, calicos, and spotties into riprap in Long Beach Harbor. We just want to fish light. I mean, I go to
Cat or Clementi,
and I'm fishing 15-pound fluorocarbon, throw a little DD100 up into the boiler zone. I've gotten fish up to 8 pounds on that so far, and it's
it actually feels like you accomplished something instead of just grinding something to the boat. You know?
It's like, holy crap, I can't believe I got that bass out of there.
It makes you a much better fisherman too, you know, being able to play the fish and not get, I mean, yesterday was honestly the first time I've been broken off by a bass in I don't know how long.
But it, you know? but you guys are talking about it's like cool to do something a little more challenging, maybe.
Yeah,
because
it's a lot more fun,
and everyone's in the mode of we got to put braid on there and donkey these,
right?
You know,
I mean, that stuff that we caught fish yesterday that were like this big,
but it's still fun.
But they bend your rod when you're fishing 8 and 10 pound. You know, it's like there's one. You know,
yeah, that's always fun.
But that lighter line thing is really cool. You know, like we do those the Marlin tournaments, the Masters. Light line marlin tournaments, and you know, we fished 16 pound mostly, but we're trolling with 16 pounds.
Let's talk. I wanted to talk about that too when you get a chance about the tournaments. That's super cool to talk about too.
But
so
what's amazing about that, you know, and I'll let Jimmy talk more about it. He's the expert. I'm just been doing it for a few years, but what's amazing is when I was new to it, the first time I went out was when the marlin were biting up at Anacap Island. I'd caught marlin trolling in Mexico before. I'd caught them on a long range trip on like 80 pound accidentally while fishing for something else. Yeah. I'd never fished light line marlin. So basically I said, I'm just going to clear the jigs in the cockpit. If you guys want to run on a fish, I'll wind in the jig. So maybe get a sleeper and a glasses. So basically we have guys up in a tower. They're looking for fish on the surface while we're trolling, hoping for fish in a jig.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of fish up on the surface. So Everybody kept running up to the bow, and I would clear all the trolling rods, bring in the chains and all that stuff. And then once the guys in the bow cast and the fish, I would drop a bait off the back. And
I got one.
And I bit, and I'm like, oh, crap, I'm on 16 pounds.
What do I do?
Big marlin just right there. I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, I bit, and we're on this boat, the Good Karma, which is
72-foot
boat, and the tower is probably 25 feet up. And Sean's up there, and he's focused on the bow. I'm like, I got one. And he's like, can't hear me. So I'm yelling, I got one. He looks back, oh, shit. I'm like, what do I do? He's like, go up to the bow. So I go up to the bow, and I'm like, don't touch the drag. Well, it's 16 pound. The rod's bent. The line's pouring off. I'm like, what's going on now?
Five
jumping.
Of drag.
We ended up getting them in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, we got it pretty quick.
But what I found out later is you can pull really hard on 16 pound.
Really hard.
Which is amazing. You know, we've had, you know.
Are you using a particular company 16 pound?
You have to fish. It has to break at 16.
Really?
Yeah, you can't fish like triple X eyes or something, that breaks at 32. Yeah, so that's how they level the playing field. If you're 12-pound fish, 16, 20-pound fish, it has to break. Like 16 breaks at, I forget what it is, 17.1.
Yeah, and they give different points for the different ones. So a fish on 12-pound would be 120 points.
It works off of points. So if you go lighter and you catch it, you can like, get
it's
more
like
points.
210 for a fish on 12, 180 for a fish on 16, and then it goes down from
then
there.
Then 120 for 30-pound or 20-pound. And so you got to try it for numbers. Like this last year, it was tough marlin fishing. We didn't have a fish the first day. There was a couple teams that had fish on 30-pound, 16-pound. I think a 12-pound fish. The second day of the tournament, we found a fish on the 14 before lines in. And you can actually babysit these fish when they're sleeping on the surface. We got there like 10 minutes before lines in. Sean Morgan's son, Rudy, who's great in the glasses, he picks up the glasses. Oh, got one. It's almost still dark. So we pull up to it, and he's like, okay, you got 9 minutes to wait while this fish is on the surface.
Yeah. It's a long like, 9 minutes.
And they're like, okay, lines in. And then Decker casts on it and gets that fish. And then we get it on 16-pound, no problem. At that point, we started fishing. Okay, if we see another one, we're going 12-pound because we need the point.
Because then we need that other point. We could have jumped up and got them.
And if we would have got, as it turned out, we would have even got another 16-pound fish. That would have been enough to win the high angler in that tournament.
Wow.
Because there's only two. But there's years like that year at Anacapa. What, we have like 9 fish or something for 2 days? And we got third place, you know, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But it's pretty fun. It's really, that offshore fishing is.
Marlin tournaments are a blast when they're biting.
Yeah. When they're not, it's horrible.
When they're not biting, it's just a long day in the cockpit, you know.
Driving.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet.
It's the most grueling fishing you'll ever do. Standing on a yacht.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Decker and I, we always, whatever boat, we had a different boat this year. We had a 47
Cabo or something.
They're selling a Good Karma, the boat we normally fish. So Sean borrowed the boat from a guy he knows who came out the first day, but then let us have the second day. I hope he's not listening because we drove it like it was stolen that second day. But you just spend the entire day burning your eyeballs in the jigs. You're basically looking
in the prop wash the whole day.
You're watching 200-foot long by 40 or 50-foot wide swath of water for something that looks like the corner of your cell phone sticking up out of the water that could be the only end.
Just a littlest scratch of the surface.
Like a matchbook coming out of the water.
Wow. Is that a fish? Like, boom, you throw a bait back. Oh, I'm on.
Yeah, that one day at Santa Barbara Island, we do that, and it's like a 200-pound blue marlin. This much fin. Yeah.
Just amazing how much you don't see where they don't come up.
And they're not biting the jigs. They're just looking. If you don't throw a bait back, you're not going to even get a chance.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing, dude.
Probably a lot different than what most of your podcasters are listening to. Hell is a marlin?
We had some trout guys that are pros. So we're trying to open it. And we had the fish head underspin, the guys from Georgia. He's an ML, the Major League Fishing Pro.
Cool.
He called in and we're trying to, but this is, since we live here, we kind of want to focus on.
Right.
And it's fun because I have no, I'm not trying to get anything out of this. I'm not trying to get sponsored or promoted. It's just fun for me.
Yeah.
And the reason I ask these questions, my payment is, what can I get from you? Like, we can learn from the guest.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, the one thing about fishing is the more different species you get good at fishing for, the better angler you are, because it all transfers over one to the other, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and you see that.
Always just only fish for bass. I mean, you'll be a good bass fisherman, but you're never going to get the experience like Eric's gotten over the last 3-4 seasons to go out on the big boats and do the marlin tournaments.
And we're also bluefin tuna experts after one day.
We did one day of expert bluefin tuna fishing.
Do you guys do any freshwater?
No.
No? Eric, no?
I probably would. Actually, we were talking about it the other day.
We were talking about fishing the freshwater bass tournament.
Talking about fishing in a freshwater bass tournament. Just going stone dick cold, no pre-fish with our...
That's
crazy,
man.
Drive the Everglades
in
and grab the whatevers and
throw
up our 150 bucks.
If he can catch calico bass on a Ned rig, he can catch largemouth bass on it.
It can't be that much different. I mean, I know it's a lot more pressured.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, it's a lot more crowded and you got to get on the merry-go-round to wait for your spot when you want to go to fish it. But fish are fish, you know. And if you get good at catching one, you should be getting good, you know, you should be able to figure them out.
Yeah.
Yeah. We go up to the Delta every year. We didn't go this year, but we rent a house up in Discovery Bay up there. And my buddy who owns the bait company in Long Beach, Nacho's Barge and all those things. Yeah. And he's really into wakeboarding. And I like wakeboarding too. I'm not great at it. But we'll go up there. Him and I and a couple other friends who grew up with sport boats will go up and rent a big house up there. I'll tow my boat up. And he'll tow his wakeboard boat up. I'll tow my Cayman up there, and we'll fish and wakeboard for a week. And that's about the only freshwater fishing I do, but it's pretty fun.
Stripers.
It's pretty easy up there. Stripers, largemouth,
that's
stuff like
fun,
that.
Yeah.
All the freshwater spots are just too far away from here to really make any
that's what
run
changed,
at it.
That's what changed my whole – I bought a low from a Last Chance Performance like 3 years ago, and then I was fishing Diamond Valley a lot. I'm like, it's so far.
Right.
And then I looked into – fishing the harbors, and I'm like,
right.
Oh, this is cool.
Way
then
better.
I got into calico fishing.
Right.
So, I mean, it you're right. It is. It's easy for me to run 20 minutes than it is an hour.
Right.
And a half.
I have a freshwater fishing story that I think you guys might appreciate.
Let's hear it.
I know Joe Gaeta was in here the other day. It made me think of it. I used to fish with Mark Higashi a lot. Him and I have been friends since we were teenagers.
Uh-huh.
I don't go into his shop anymore because he's busy and he's very into freshwater fishing now. And
yeah.
We used to fish saltwater tournaments together and different stuff. But years and years ago, I was probably in my mid-20s, he's like, there's this striper bite going on at Lake Skinner. He's all there, we're going to go. He's all, come by the shop. We used to go hang out over there and at night and stuff, whatever. So
yeah.
He's bringing up these giant rubber trout. He's got a 5-gallon bucket, and they're like the length of the rubber bucket.
Yeah.
I'd never seen anything like that. And I'm like, are you messing with me? Because this looks ridiculous. He's all, no. And I'm like, should I bring in the other rods? No, we're just going to fish these. Okay, so we drive to Lake Skinner in the morning. We go, and where you go to pay to get in, there's a bunch of Polaroid pictures still on the windows of the guard shack there, and every picture is Mark holding up a big striper. So I'm like, wow, I can't wait to see what happens. So we go out, we get out of the water. This is my first time. I'd fished Lake Puddingstone once with another friend. This is my first time actually being in a bass boat on a lake.
Yeah.
We get out there, and I cast this big trout out. It's winding on the surface. There's this huge boil. I'm like, is there otters or sea lions or something in here? What is that? And he's all that was a striper. I'm like, no way. And like next cast, he gets like a 30-pounder.
Yeah.
We had, I don't know, we had probably 10 striper that day that were from like 15 to about 30.
Awesome.
And it was like, oh, this is amazing. So easy to do this. So I got some of those baits. I got a rod. I went back like 2 weeks later, rented the boat, never saw it. And I gave up on freshwater fishing.
There you go. That's it. And that's how it works, man. 100%. That's what... Change me from I love freshwater fishing, but now it's like I can go fish calico. I know I'll catch something.
You got that inner harbor. It's such a great fishery.
Yeah.
The wind's blowing. You can hide from the weather. You can, low tide, high tide, whatever you crankbait, rubber worm, swim bait, rip bait. I mean, whatever you like to fish, you can fish in there and usually catch something on it,
And if you size your tackle properly, you can have fun, and you don't need to make a 60-mile run to have your five fish hero shot at the end of the day, and 60 miles of fire hose to the face on the way home.
Five fish hero shot.
Well, it's funny. A lot of these guys who go to Clemente, they're like, yeah, you got really good at 4 o'clock till dark.
Yeah,
I'm already taking a nap. We're usually off that island at 11.
Yeah,
we're at my house by 2. Usually.
Yeah, we're having cocktail by 3:30 is the goal at all times.
Yeah, if it's after 3:30 to my house, it's like a full day.
Now, is this a special cocktail you guys like to have right here?
He is a Maker's Mark guy, and I'm a vodka Red Bull guy.
I was a little sleepy, so I think
he was feeling a little
Red Bull would help
today.
Yeah.
So
he you need the upper and the downer, huh?
Yeah. Basically, all I drink is coffee, water, and bourbon in that order.
Those trips to the islands for us, and that's why I'm so lucky to have gotten into fishing with Eric, is, you know, get out early, get over there, figure it out, catch them, go home.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, once you've caught how many bass, you know, and when it's biting, you get that real good window where it bites, just fucking lights out for 45 minutes or so, maybe, if you're lucky, an hour, hour and a half, and then it starts petering out. It's like, oh, bitch, and let's hang out for another 6 hours till it bites again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm like, fuck, are you good? We always look at each other. You good? I'm good. Are you good? Yeah. What time is it? 10:45? Let's go.
The best example of that, we went to was Black Friday last year, and I know because I remember it being Black Friday. Me, Decker, and Matt ran over to Clemente, and we planned to just stay as long as we needed to. We get into Northwest Harbor, and it was the best calico bass fishing any of us had ever seen at that island. I mean, like, we probably had 50 fish over five. We're 8 and 9 pounders. Matt got one that might have been 10 pounds.
Wow.
We didn't have a scale.
It was
and this
amazing.
Is by like 10 o'clock.
This is all on the hard bait and the weed.
Yeah.
And the weedless.
Decker got one of those Sebille stick shads. Gets like a, you know, 14-incher. He's bigger 8-inch to 14-incher at the boat, then like an 8-pounder comes and eats the other hook.
Oh my God.
That's insanity.
It was good fishing.
And, it sounds like
we're
it.
We made like 4 or 5 drifts. It's
we
like
were watching boats go by us.
Yeah.
Off the castle, back pier. I mean, 3 or 4 times, the same couple guys.
And we
by.
Felt like, you know, if you see us sitting in a spot, I'm an obsessive mover.
Yeah.
I'm like, if you see us sitting there that long, you should it's come good. Over. We don't need to
call. Hey, you guys getting them?
But Jerry, our buddy Jerry finally pulls up. And I'm like, dude, just drift this kelp line. It's wide open. Yeah. So we make one more drift through. We pull out. We're like getting our foul weather gear on. We're going to take off. He's all, I thought you said it was biting. I'm like, yeah, it's been biting for 3 hours. How many bass do we want to catch? He's all, it's 10:30. I'm like, perfect. We'll be home by one.
Right.
You know?
Let's go beat the wind. You know?
No, I hear you. That's kind of the same way I go. You know, like, we'll go for half a day and then we catch some fish. Cool. Let's go home.
Yeah.
And with little kids, too.
Oh, right yeah. Now, it's you like, spend your time at home.
I got to get home as soon as possible, or our wife's going to cut my head off.
I mean, I can see where the guys say that, you know, it's an investment. They work all week, and they got one day to go, and they're going to go to the island. They're going to get the most bang for your buck. But, mm-hmm. you know, shit. Usually when I go to Eric and I go, I'm 60 years old, and I'm so still jacked up. I'm up at 3. You know, I'm usually up at 4 to go to my day job, and I'm up at 2:30, 3 o'clock. You know, all right, man, we're going, getting everything ready.
Yeah.
You know, and then you launch and you jam over there and you fish hard, and you know if it slows down and you try to wait around and you get that little flurry before dark. You know, and sometimes dark's at 7:30.
Yeah.
You know, so you fish until 7:30. You know, into the darkness, and okay, now you got to. You know, I don't like running home in the dark
hammered by wind
that
on
pounding,
the way home.
That pounding ride, I'm over it, you know.
Yeah, it's just, I bet. I mean, you've done it for so many years, it's like...
Yeah.
And we have the luxury of fishing when we want to, basically. So it's like, I'm not going to beat myself up. I can come in tomorrow if I want to, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, those guys got to go to work the next day, and they're getting back from the island at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, you know.
No,
yeah,
I
don't like
too much for me.
Yeah.
That's why when yesterday we were in the bay going, yeah, this is pretty nice, this bay trip today, you know.
It was cold. We
really
got cold
in the morning. You know? Oh, yeah, it was really cold.
For about our 5-minute run, and then we're like, oh, that's good.
That's a nice run right there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, you know, and you don't, and this is something I was thinking about listening to a lot of this, you know, your guys' podcast and stuff. I think, you know, you talk about, and I'm maybe jumping out of turn here, you know, talk about advice to give the people who aren't really into this. Don't try and live up to the expectations of somebody's Instagram photo.
Yeah.
Because it's not realistic. You know, I take a lot of photos for the magazines, the internet, and all the other things I'm doing stuff for. And some of the photos that look like, that must have been the best day ever, weren't. You know, there's a picture, there's a huge bass I got with you and Matt that one day. Probably 10-pound plus fish. We didn't have a scale on the boat. If you looked at that, you'd go, oh, man, it got a giant bass. You know, it looks beautiful.
I think it was one of the two fish we caught that day, right?
Decker did not catch
a single bass in two trips.
Yeah.
Dude.
Two trips to Clemente. All I caught was mackerel at the harbor mouth that I was going to use to throw on marlin if we saw one.
Yeah. So,
you know. But, like, everybody thinks it's the enchanted isle, you know, the tragic pile. I mean, it can be as bad as any place you've ever been.
Yeah.
We almost ran your boat out of gas that day, too.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we ran
79.98 gallons we burned. Well, we were doing the yellowfin, bluefin combo into the island loop. Looped the island trying to find out. I was like, hey, this place sucks. Let's go.
You know, and you know, it's funny about the tuna. We pretty much every trip this year we saw them. We only caught them two trips.
We'd see them and like, do you have anything tied on? Yeah. No. Do you have anything tied on? No. Okay, let's go.
One of the classic ones, we're running to Clemane, we're running to the East End. We're about 6 or 7 miles off the island. Yellowfin just come up jumping right in front of us. Pull the boat out of gear. Tie a couple of jigs on. See the yellowfin? No. Oh, there they are. Drive over there. Make a couple casts. They're not coming up. They move. The birds are going. Yeah, let's just go pitch bass. You know?
Yeah.
This is too much effort.
Yeah, definitely. Know?
But then we're peeling off the island at 11 o'clock, and I'm like, let's go maybe run down a little towards the 289 when the weather was nice. Let's see if we can find some fish. There are probably some down there. And I go, okay, you get your thing tied on. He's tying on his subwalker, and I look at we're not fucking half a mile off the island. I'm like, oh, there's some.
Yeah.
You know?
Looping on a whale.
Saw a whale. Go, whale. You know there's some on that whale. Slide over there. Fucking fish shining on the whale. Eric hammers like 50-pounder on the subwalker.
Yeah. No way.
Made another couple dozen casts on. It's like, nah, it's good. Let's go.
Yeah.
Only boat on it.
Yeah, that's the thing, too. It's like, you know, we had that day where he got a 200-pounder this year, and those things suck. You know, I've bought a couple of those things now that came off and different stuff like that. You know, the guys that are excited about it, that's great for them, but what a bullshit fishery that really is. You know, you got there and you drag this rubber flying fish around by a kite you can barely see off in the distance. You know, I know that people, it's a glory fish. People like to have that. But, you know, we went out that day and it's like we found a huge foam burst and that was super fun. But after you fight two and catch one.
It's not that fun.
We had a broken gaff, so we couldn't. And it was the only gap we had, so we wouldn't have been able to land another one anyway. Yeah. But we wouldn't have fished anymore anyway. It's like, yeah, that was really something. We're gonna time to go home and have a cocktail. And we're an hour late.
You know, that and the whole, you know, not to put anybody down for it, but that whole fighting your fish in the rod holder, you know, just fucking get an electric reel and a net, you know, fighting the fish in the rod holder. I mean, on a skiff, you shouldn't have to use the rail. You know, get yourself a good harness and a belt and stand up like a man. You know, you're not.
That's the IGFA Jimmy talking.
You're not flexing any. I don't care about your 200 pounder that you got. You know, when you're kneeing it on the rail. You know, I mean, that's just the way I am. I would not. Eric's like, you want me to take him? No, you're not touching this fucking rod, man. I would not let that thing touch the rail. I fought it in the belt, no harness. Man, we killed it in like 25 minutes, right?
Yeah, it was probably up in 20 minutes, another 40 minutes trying to get into
trying
the boat.
Trying to get the gap. Once we got it to the boat.
But just you two trying to pull it in?
Yeah. Well, no, what happened was, so this is a horrible story. I was hoping this one would come up.
This is it.
So
we get it to the boat.
Yes, we have this fish of color. We'd hooked one before on a 9-foot jig stick.
That was definitely not
the right
setup.
We ended up breaking 80-pound braid between the reel and the first guy pulling it so hard. Dragging the boat backwards. It was just, I was using the reel. I ruined Jacker's reel. I ruined my jig stick. All the handle was ripped off. It was just a nightmare. And ended up breaking because it was like, I'm going to back up another step here. We're seeing these fish. We have mackerel. So Jimmy's trying to hook one on a mackerel with a swordfish rod. They're not eating the mackerel. The mackerel is swimming right through a football field of foaming 150 to 250, probably 300-pound bluefin.
Yeah.
So I'm like, are these just not biting? And I'm eyeing the subwalker. I got to tell my jig stick. I'm like, I'm just going to cast out and see if they're biting. My boat partner Matt and I had just fought a 200-pounder, probably close to 200-pounder, for an hour and a half, 2 or 3 weeks before, and lost it to color on a jig stick with the wrong gear.
God.
So I'm like, all right, so I cast the thing out, it hits the water, I'm immediately on. Fish runs off like 200 yards of line, comes off. Winding the thing back, like this fast, you know, not presenting the lure. 50 feet from the boat, another fish eats it, runs straight down. Dumps half a spool and comes off. Winding it straight up, another fish eats it, and then we're on that thing for like 45 minutes, just killing us. So I'm like, that was bullshit. I said, you know, what else do we have? So I had a big popper. Yeah. So I was like, tie that on your swordfish rod.
100 to 100.
While he's tying it on, there's foamers up in every direction. I'm like, which one do you want to run to? Well, how about that one? Okay. Lobs that thing out there. You know, and
we were on.
Yeah, and he fought that thing for about 20 minutes. He has it a deep color. It looks smaller because it's deep. And the water's real clean. It's like, that's probably a 100-pounder. Okay, cool. We got our gaff of standards, a fiberglass gaff. and
8 foot AFCO with a big hook.
Mm-hmm. So right when I get the gaff, the fish swims straight to the surface and rolls on its side and goes in a circle.
And said, I'm 200 plus.
Yeah. And I'm like, shit. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? He's all, so when it comes through, gaff it under its belly by the pectoral fins.
Yeah.
And whatever you do, don't let go.
Okay, if you gaff them there and roll them over, they're on their back. Uh-huh. They're not ever used to being on their back. So a lot of times,
right,
they sit there for a minute.
You would think. So
that's what they tell me in the book.
Yeah. So I gaffed the thing, and I did not let go. But 6 seconds later, there's water 50 feet in the air. Decker's just about falling over, and I'm holding a 3 foot section of gaff handle.
Oh my!
And the fish is smoking drag.
Oh, he's smoking drag that time.
So we get it back up. And we're like, what are we going to do now? And there's some divers, pre-divers around there. So I'm waving to them, like, come over here, help
us. And they're
waving
back. Yeah, right on. We're getting them too.
Cool,
yeah,
man.
So we get it up, and Decker's like, get the dock line, and we'll make a loop and run the rod through it. And then when it comes, we'll slide it over the fish's nose and pull it tight to the tail rope.
Yeah.
So we do that, and the popper is in the fish's mouth, and the line gets snagged on the popper, and it rips the line out of my hands. The fish swims away again. I'm like, do you have another line? No, that's the only one I have.
Shit.
I'm like, all right. So we have our only line attached to the fish.
Yeah. Our gaff only gaff stuck in the fish.
So he gets it back to color. I'm like, should I grab it by the tail? And he's like, no, I think the gaff is still in the fish.
Yeah.
So we get the fish up to color or up to the surface, but now the gaff is on the other side of the 200-pound fish and hanging straight down.
Yeah.
So I've got one arm under the gunwale, reaching it up to my shoulder over this fish, trying not to get the popper in my hand, grab that little gaff stuff and roll that thing over.
Got the dock line.
He untangles the dock line for the popper hook that's on there.
Got
he gets
it
around
the
tail. We tied up like, oh, yeah,
like,
high five. I'm holding the rope with one hand, thinking the fish is dead.
Oh.
This thing goes apeshit. I mean, that rope, like, in my hand. I only had like a foot of it left. I stopped. And, oh, God. And we try and pull the fish in. He's like, I'm too tired. I'm like,
oh, it was hard.
And
the gunnel's low on the back of my boat. He goes,
yeah.
I go, just get that thing all the way to the back. And we heave-hoed it over the side. And
what
went,
a
wow.
mess. That's
the end
of that.
Once it hit the deck, it was like, fuck, that was a big one. It taped it like 207 or something.
Yeah, we're never doing that again.
Yeah. We were like, we're done. Then we're like, we're done. I'm like, well, just let me throw the bass rod on this spot up here, you know, and we'd hang another one.
It was a great day.
We
knew
day.
It wasn't going to last.
We were all by ourselves that day, just the divers, that diver boat that was back there. I think that was Lasley's kid, actually, that was back there. You know,
but that's what's fun. You know, that's what that offshore tuning, that should be a novelty for guys. It's not if you get too into it, you're just gonna be miserable. I mean, running far. I mean, that stuff was less than a mile off Farnsworth.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, it's
and the thing
fine.
About that stuff is too. It's like fuck. I mean, I processed that whole fish. You know, I mean, I gilled and gutted it when we were out there. You know, and I mean, it was a 200-pound tuna is a lot of meat.
I'm sure,
you know?
A lot
I mean,
of work
I was
too.
Like. Trying to give it away. I mean, because we have the rule at our house is like nothing goes in the freezer. You either eat it or you give it away. So, I mean, and there's guys that are like, oh, I got, you know, when they were going, oh, I got two. I'm going back out tomorrow. I'm like, you're serious.
Are you throwing a dumpster?
Why?
Or,
just, you know.
Too much fish.
Fucking tie something onto your dog and just let him run down the street and try to fight him back to the house. You know, if you're jonesing for something to pull that hard,
dude.
You know, as opposed to go out and, I mean, it's sad to think how much of that fish probably went to waste.
Yeah.
You know, people that they either didn't take care of it on the boat right, or they didn't take care of it once they got home. Because if you don't get those gills and that stomach out.
That fish is like 150 degrees in size.
I mean,
it's disgusting when you cut them open.
The thing to do is you gotta towel them for like at least an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you try to take that shit out of them immediately and throw it in your ice, it's just going to burn all your ice out immediately. So you... Throw, I mean, like the swordfish guys use big burlap, that really thick burlap, you know. So you got to towel them for an hour, like to cover them up and keep them wet with something, just to, so their temperature just starts to come down.
Mm-hmm.
Then you know you make that cut and you pull their gills and their guts out and try to stuff a bag of ice in that cavity first to get them to come down more. Then you can go ahead and put them in the kill bag.
Okay,
but I mean, how many guys do that?
They're
not very many.
Yeah.
You know, they throw them on the deck. You know, I got to weigh my fish with the guts in, you know.
Hey, wait till it gets nice and stiff so I can take a picture.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. But, you know, it's cool. You know, it's
well,
a good...
you guys have fished so long, you've seen it all.
Seen a lot.
Like, you guys have seen a lot of trends and,
yeah.
You know.
We were also very lucky, which is good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm not going
to
speak for Decker.
I got to catch the very end of the good and then the really slow and now the good again.
Yeah.
When was it slow? Like
90s.
Yeah, the mid-90s. Until the 90s, 98 El Nino was dog shit. Yeah.
Really?
Slow. I mean, just slow.
You go on an overnight boat out of San Diego and catch 3-pound yellowtail and 4 and 5 pound yellowpin, and that was good fishing. But that was before the internet. You're like, yeah, they're all the same size in the paper.
Before the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But one of the things about this is something I wanted to get out there, and that, a lot of the guys that come on here, I know we're all here to talk about being good fishermen and stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is something for the guys or listeners who are like, wow, these guys are good fishermen. You don't have to be that good of a fisherman. You just have to pay attention and get out there. And if you go out there a lot of times and do the right thing, you'll get really lucky. Yeah. I mean, had a 2015, I had a last-minute article request from Sport Fishing Magazine for a thing on the El Nino thing that was happening. I called Decker. I'm like, hey, dude, can we go out and troll for blue marlin or wahoo? That's when they were catching them.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, but I'm going to Cabo for a month to fish the Bisbees and stuff. He's like, I can go Tuesday from like 8 to noon or something. I'm like, oh, that's fine. We'll go out and take some pictures. We went out and put the jigs in, and 10 minutes later, we caught like a 50-pound wahoo.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
And then we ran to the Avalon Bank. We're trolling for blue marlin, the boat nearest hook.
Blue marlin, yeah.
And we were back at the dock by noon.
And you feel like that's kind of a luck.
It's 100% luck.
Okay. That's what I mean.
And if you put yourself in the right place, and you if you're new to fishing, if you're trying to get better at fishing, pay attention to what people are doing. And try and mimic that. Have the right gear. Have the right approach.
Yeah.
Learn as much as you can. And just go out and do it. And the best stuff, no one's a Southern California wahoo trolling expert. It's blunt. Look, and what's even funnier with that wahoo, we trolled by this kelp patty and caught a Dorado.
Yeah.
And I saw a bunch of flash under it, so we were going to troll by it again. We put the jigs out. Decker's like, oh, that the short corner's not out far enough. So I let the jig back 10
about
feet.
6 feet.
I put it back in gear. It's like... And we haven't. It's like, if I hadn't have done that or whatever, it's just blind luck, So put yourself out there, go out there, do the stuff that's smart. And, one of the reasons that my whole goal in life is to fish where other people are not. I don't like to be around other boats.
Yeah.
I bet. Yeah. I feel the same way.
Yeah. And, if you go to like when those bluefin were biting at Desperation Reef or whatever, there'd be 100 boats out there. I mean, that's not the only place there are tuna. So look what's there. Look where conditions are the same. Hey, go take a look. You're probably not going to find them, but if you do, you're going to look like a hero, or whatever.
And you'll have a much better chance of catching them if you do find them.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that the chance is probably tenfold compared to where everyone's on a boat, on a same spot with all those boats.
Yeah.
That's the reason we get our own boats. We don't have to fish around people. I was a sport boat guy for 30 years. It's been over 10 years since I've been on one, and I would never go again because of that.
And the thing about owning your own boat is you can fish what you want, too. I mean... Honestly, I know for a fact that neither of us have probably fished a lead-headed swim bait in over 2 years.
We were actually laughing. We had Brian Sander, who makes LK Lures, out on the boat at Clemente. He's tying on a swim bait with a lead. I'm like, what the hell is
what
that?
What the hell is that thing, man?
He's like, no lead-headed swim bait lure, huh?
We just don't like to fish that way. If they don't bite in the top 5 feet of the column, we're not going to catch
other stuff. I mean, I've been throwing the crankbait super hard for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I've been throwing the rip bait for a while now. I mean, just... other things, that
I've
go out and catch them on a swim bait almost every single day.
Uh-huh.
But it's like, I'd be way more stoked to get one or two on the crankbait than 10 or 15 on, crawling a lead head.
It's like the hookup bait guy was on here the other day. Chad, he's a cool guy. But, those baits, those things work. I mean, they'll shoot the lights out. You couldn't get me to fish one because it's so not how I want to fish.
Yeah.
It's a very effective bait, but
it's not
my style of fishing.
I'm not that horny to wind one in.
Yeah.
I like to cast
you
and
like
crank.
You like a challenge.
I like to cast
and
crank.
Hey, there we go. We just got a sample for the new intro.
There you go. It's actively tricking the fish into biting a lure through your presentation is what it comes down to. We fished the Sebil stick shad, which is a very difficult bait to fish right. It's a weird-looking bait, but you can really... get the fish to come out and react to it. And it's not the same every time. Sometimes they want it, burn it. Sometimes they want it slow. Sometimes they want a real long pause with the thing floating on the surface. And, you figure those things out. And then when you get a bite and you can repeat that over and over, it's very rewarding.
You feel like you've accomplished something as opposed to, like, firing out a 2 ounce swim bait and letting it sink to the bottom and crawling it along the bottom, you know, dunk. Oh, there's one.
Yeah, and it's cool to hear everyone's different outlook on it because Justin, but I mean, both of us are pretty, he's coming back into calico fishing or fishing, you know, like more, and I'm just starting. So it's like, yeah, I don't know how to fish a swim bait that great. I fish a jerk shad a lot.
Right.
I'll fish jerk baits.
That jerk shad's money.
Oh, man. And then I
whenever it's not biting somewhere, I always tell Eric because that 7-inch jerk shad, I mean, if I got a lot to do with like getting that thing on the West Coast.
Oh man, you know, Jeff Leveson had a couple packs of them, and we fished them, and I'm like, dude, we killed it.
That owner sledhead set up to fish with that bait, fish it with the real handle, and
stuff. Yeah,
that was all yours,
that thing going. But I mean, we will be at spots, and we won't be catching shit. And I'll be like, hey, man, you know what works good here?
Jerk shad.
I fished through all of that spots with the jerk shad.
We've joked, but only taking jerk shad some trips.
Yeah, we're like, oh, we should only bring jerk shad to next
time. You know what's funny? We'll go to Clemente or wherever we go, or Catalina, and we'll bring three rods each, and, you know, we'll have...
Do you usually fish with... how many rods do you guys usually take? That's what I have a question to ask.
It's different for tournaments or for fun fishing. We've been really cutting it back lately to like a crankbait rod, a hard bait rod, maybe a 10 or 12 pound rip bait rod.
And a service iron rod just in case.
And a service iron rod just in case.
Yeah.
You know, but shit. Tournament days, it's like overload. Yeah. You know, I got
a
16-foot running crankbait rod, 8-foot running crankbait rod.
Yeah.
Small depending Alabama on the tournament rig. You're doing. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. But when we fun fish, you know,
when fun fish, it's like three rods each.
One or two of them's going to get picked up.
I mean, one.
The last time we went to Clemente, I threw nothing but a DD-100 on 15-pound fluorocarbon line the entire trip because I didn't care. And that's one of the nice things about fishing a lot is I don't give a shit if I catch anything or not. And a lot of times there's three guys on the boat, I won't even fish. Even on Jimmy's boat, I'll just drive from the console. You know, I don't really care that much. And
you're more about catching the fish the way you want to catch the
fish. Yeah, exactly. Right. Otherwise, I'm happy just fishing the way I want to fish. If I catch something, it's great. And that's kind of the whole thing. And I think I didn't used to be that way. I used to be the guy like, oh my God, they caught yellowtail in San Diego. I got to leave work and go down there immediately. If I don't catch the most on the boat, I'm going to be mad all week and I have to go get into it next week and all this other stuff. But then, you know, and then it's like, oh, I got to at least catch 5 fish in this tournament. And then I realized, you know, well, if you just try and catch 5 fish to weigh in the tournament, you're probably not going to win the tournament. So it's like, well, you know, I want to catch 25 pounds of tournament, I need this. So I'm not catching this. I'm going to go fish somewhere else or do something different. Yeah. You know, you start fishing correctly.
And you guys both fish with Matt, right?
I fish with Matt, but this year I'm going to be fishing with Jimmy because Matt has trouble getting off work for it.
And it's too cold in the mornings for my partner on a lot of the tournaments. The wife gets chilly. But going back to one of the things Eric's saying, you know, if you want to be a good fisherman, you got to be able to fish everything. You know, I fished that jerk shad, I mean, for a long time, you know,
I've seen you before. I even knew anyone was your videos.
That was what on YouTube, I fished, videos, you know, and I'm like, fuck, man, I got to expand, you know. So I got, like, I don't know how many years ago it was, I got into fishing that SP Minnow and I just fished it. And that's all I fished.
Great,
SP Minnow, SP Minnow, SP Minnow. Then I'm like, fuck this SP Minnow, man. I got to learn how to fish crankbait. Fucking last few years, just crank, 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 man. That's all I want to fish is the crankbait. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, you know, whatever else the next it's going to be like. There's no good golfers that can only hit their driver.
That's true.
You know, there's no good golfers that can only putt. If you can't get everything from one to the other, you know.
So you're expanding the arsenal.
Yeah, you
more
can't
and more.
Have those weak spots in your in your game because, you know, you'll get blanked, when, especially for tournament fishing, you know.
And if you want to become a better fisherman, don't go where the fishing's good. That's one of the things we learned a long time ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, good fishing never made good fishermen. It's not, you can go to Clemente and you can be the king there and you can, oh, I catch freaking 10 6-pounders every single trip. Go fish PV in April.
Yeah.
And you're going to be like, oh my God, are there even fish in this ocean? Yeah.
With the current going uphill.
Yeah. So it's just stuff that you learn. And, you know, a lot of times it's not as fun, but if you look at it as a challenge to, hey, how can I become a better angler?
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that I talk about in a lot of stuff that I write and stuff like that is that we're not all great right off the bat. And, you know, some things are more rewarding than other things. You know, if you don't know how to fish marlin and you go out and you catch a marlin, you're like, fuck yeah, I just caught a marlin.
Yeah.
But if you don't know how to catch calico bass and a kelp at Rocky Point during the fall when the conditions are bad and you figure it out and you catch a 2-pound calico, it's not as exciting. But if you want to figure out, oh, you know, I just got five of these, I figured this out, you need to take that reward as it is and not just associate it with a bigger fish or a more glamorous fish.
Yeah.
Because you learn a lot more by figuring out a tough condition than you do by catching something big or remarkable.
Right.
So that's like, you know, the guy's like, you know, I got a 10-pound calico bass at whatever, or, you know, whatever.
Sacramento Reef.
Yeah. Or, you know, it's my grandmother who was from Germany. It's a German saying, but it translates as the dumbest farmers grow the biggest potatoes. And that doesn't mean, you know, it's what it says, just because you can get lucky and have something big doesn't mean that you're good. You know, and it's the guy that can go and catch fish in every situation that's going to be the better angler, you know?
Yeah,
that's sense. Why I like fishing with him, because I'm more of like a free baller, like, let's just fucking go. I'm looking in here. And I've actually learned a lot from fishing with Eric, because he's like, really looks at it hard, and it's like, you know, in fact, the kelp doesn't look that good here. I know the water looks okay. Yeah, you go ahead and make a couple casts. All right. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, you're right. Let's split. Boom, and we take off and go to the other spot.
You know, reading water and things like that are really important.
I'll take him to spots, and he'll go, fuck, I've been by this spot a million times, and I've never pulled in here. And we're just like, bam, 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 you know. Yeah.
And that's how you find those spots. Yeah. By fucking going in there and figuring it out. But, you know,
definitely,
it's a lot of guys, you know, it's if you have a spot mindset when you're fishing for anything, that's not going to work. You know, you're going to, there's going to be a good percentage of failure. And the ability to determine things or to take a look at things. And my partner, Matt, always gets so mad at me when we're fishing sand bass in tournaments. I used to be just about sand bass fishing because that was a good way to win the tournaments. And, I'll still fish them during tournaments. I don't fish them for fun anymore now. I haven't figured it out. As much as you can. But we'd pull up on a spot, small structure spot, and I'd say, okay, let it go. He'd drop a swim bait down. I'd be like, stop, wind it up. I'm not even to the bottom yet. Yeah, it's fine. We're off. We didn't get on the spot right. You know, we slid past it, or just that, you know, we're 2 feet off where we need to be to catch that fish.
Yeah.
And that
I can't even see the spot. Yeah. And he's like, no, forget it. You're off it. I thought, great. And, you know, and I cast behind the boat. Then. No.
Talking about the spot, you know, structure spots that are submerged things. You know, I was one of the, just the previous boat that Matt and I got was a Blazer Bay 18-foot. It was a bay boat they brought out here. We got like the first one out here, and the guy was tied in with the Humminbird, so he got us that side imaging when nobody really had it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it took a while to figure that out, but, you know, just something as simple as that, I learned at some of the more pressured artificial reefs, like in Santa Monica Bay or in San Diego and stuff, just the fact that a boat drives over them will put those fish down.
Yeah.
And by using side imaging or something like that to find a spot off to the side of the boat and don't ever run it over, but cast to it, it gets more bites. And then you can take it to the next step where I have to be down sun of the spot.
Wow.
So I'm like,
so you're
shadow
really, you're doing some research.
Yeah, and
that's what I mean when he figures it out. You know,
and
I'm just like, oh, there's a rock over here.
My boat away from these fish. And, you know, that's, these are the little things. And those are the things you tweak out on when the fishing's tough. If you go to Clemente and it's wide open, you're not going to learn any of that.
Yeah.
And that may not help you anywhere else, like, but it could. I mean, the same stuff worked in Santa Monica Bay, worked in San Diego. I showed Decker, I'm like, go ahead, cast like 50 feet that way. Hits the water, you know, whereas if you went and dropped on this rock, you wouldn't even think there was a fish there.
Right.
You know, so these are the
little things to think about when you're fishing. Do you guys keep logs?
I used to.
I don't need to. I have one of those weird memories that
he's,
I have.
He's got it dialed.
He's that good, huh?
Yeah.
He's that
good. It's not being good.
I'm just messing with you.
I'm really good at that game where you turn the cards over, remember what's on there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny. I don't know why I have this or whatever, but I can leave the harbor and I could drive straight to 10-foot around structure spot off Newport Beach with no coordinates until I'm, you know, a couple hundred yards from it, turn on the graph and adjust my course.
You'll know kind of where you're going.
Yeah, that's, I just great, have a sense for everything and a layout, and I have very specific memory of conditions in places, too. I can remember, this kelp bed 5 years ago, I was here this time of year. We had downhill current, bass bed. I caught one over there. I don't know why. I don't know my wife's birthday, but...
That's probably the worst thing to not know.
Right.
it really is.
But you think keeping a log would help a lot of
anglers? If you can't remember it, you need to do it.
The only reason, but I mean, like, the reason keeping, I really kept a log was just to see where I was and what I caught and when, time of day, more of a time of day thing.
Time of day, maybe even current, maybe even
just
it
was always either right before or right after the high or low, usually always. And it was just like 20 bass, 15 bass, 10 bass, you know, at the pipe, number one,
and that's
number
a different
two,
thing for you because you were doing it for a living.
Right.
And you had to make sure you get your clients on bass. you know, or on whatever fish you're doing, you got
bass. I'm a bass guide. I don't catch squid. I don't fucking buy live bait. We're going. If you're going with me, you're going bass fishing. I mean, unless the offshore thing's going gung ho, then
unless
you're going to go.
Wide open
then you're
going to
throw. Then you're going to go throw poppers for something, but you're not going to fly line sardines or any of that other scaly bullshit on my boat.
Yeah, but the trick to that whole thing is just pay exact attention to what's happening. And you know, if you go somewhere and catch a fish, don't say, "I went to Rocky Point and I caught a bass and a kelp."
Yeah.
What part of the kelp was I at? How was the current running in relation to the kelp? Where was this fish? Why was this fish here? What was going on in the water? Was there bait? What was the water clarity? You know, if you can develop a story as to why that fish is there, you can look around and see other spots that are going to have potentially fish there. And if you go to another spot that looks the same and you catch another one, you can develop a pattern.
Yeah.
You can go just, you know.
Click down the beach.
Yeah.
Even if you can only put two or three of the pieces together, a lot of times you'll still catch fish.
And it's a good point of view you have is to maybe learn more before you just go out and start chucking.
Yeah.
Think about stuff, you know, and kind of do the work, put the work in a little more, you know, maybe.
Right.
That's a good point to talk about, definitely.
Yeah, you know, one of the, probably the best, not one of the single best deep water structure guy on the coast is a guy named Eric Johnson. He used to fish tournaments, just dominate.
Mm-hmm.
He stopped doing it. I'm not sure why, probably because of kids and stuff, but I used to talk a lot to him when he was fishing tournaments. We compete for the same water a lot of times, and that guy would go as far as getting one of those fish cam cameras and dropping it down to the bottom to look at how spots lay out.
Wow.
And see, when he's not fishing a tournament, just going really say, okay, this spot's here, is a rock off the side, there's this, this is where there's bait hanging. And then remember that and, you know, see how the entire thing around it. And by doing so, he had a complete understanding. Okay, it's downhill current or down and in. This spot, that spot, this spot is probably going to have active fish on it. Let me go here, here, and here.
Yeah.
Here I can go catch a six-pounder this time of day. When he used to fish spotted bay bass, he was a real good guy at that. He would write down the depth of water at the end of particular docks when he would catch fish. And so then he would track his tide.
That's way too much work for $1,200 for me.
I'll tell you what, though. The guy is probably one of the best tournament anglers. So. Yeah.
Super good. Are we taking a break?
Oh, I just got a piss real quick.
Okay.
You have to go to use the restroom anyway?
No, I'm good.
All right. You can keep talking.
Is the camera rolling?
Yeah.
We can talk among ourselves.
There we go.
We can talk about you not being able to get out of the truck earlier.
Fuck, what an idiot. Did he tell you?
What's that?
Was pushing the seatbelt on the fucking door side. I'm like, man, I can't get out of the truck.
Yeah.
How long did it take to get that thresher in?
It took a while, man. That was a battle. It was like, I had it on. I fucking... Something happened, and I went to fucking check my drag, and the line broke in my hand.
Oh, shit.
So I pulled the line off the spool and fucking did a dirt double surgeon's loop back on it and fucking swung back out and got it back. It was like an hour or something. Yeah, but when that happened, we called the IGFA, and they're like, no, that's totally – you can't splice onto another rod. But because I was holding the line and it broke in my hand, I was like, fuck! I was so pissed because I was like, oh, 45 minutes or an hour into it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, damn it. And I'm like, shine it. And I didn't put my rod down because you can't put your rod in the rod holder. And I had it under my arm. Just a freaky thing that everything went right.
You know, speaking of that.
That was one of the only sharks I ever caught because I do not fish for sharks.
Yeah.
I like sharks.
In those Marlin tournaments, you know, they have IGFA rules. The angler, we're not recording right now, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, good.
All right. That's a good story.
Anything that you guys,
if
you guys remember something, like I did to everyone, if there's something you want to cut out, just let me know.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
There's never anything.
So we're fishing the Masters tournament, and when Decker and I are in the cockpit, we'll take turns. Like you go to the bathroom, go downstairs, whatever. So it was the time of day to go take a dump.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. So Jimmy was in the. He's like, I'm gonna go first because I'm watching the jigs. I'm like, so as soon as he comes out, because Marlin are biting. So as soon as he comes out, I'm going to run downstairs, use the head, come back out. So I'm mentally and physically preparing myself to go take a dump. And right when Jimmy comes out, I stand up. One of the trolling rods right next to me goes off, and I grab it. I'm like, oh, shit, I just grabbed the rod.
Once you touch it, it's yours. You own it.
I'm like,
there's
no handing it off.
And there was another boat at the time, the Gadzooks. I think they were on a fish for 8 hours, and the guy had to take a dump in a bucket in the bow with his buddy standing there watching.
Yeah.
Oh, that's part of the rules of
You can't. Yeah, once you're on the rod, you're on
The rod can't touch anything except
the rail. It can't go back in the rod holder.
So I'm like, okay. And I've got IGFA. This one's on 30 pound. We were trolling that first year. We were fishing a little heavier on our trolling rods. and I was spooled on a Tiagra 20. I mean, there's 600 yards line. I'm like, oh, this isn't going to end well. So they'll chase the fish down with the boat. And I got up to the bow, and Sean's going as fast as I can want to play 25 knots after this fish through the fleet. We get it up. I walk it back to the stern. They grab the leader. I drop the rod and run it up with my pants and run it down the stairs. You know, another minute, I wouldn't have made it. But, yeah.
Hey, sometimes you have to shit your pants for the fish.
Yeah.
So, since you guys have some time with boats, do you have any rookie boat moves?
Like I've got a great one.
Let's hear it. Yeah. You guys can go both. Go start. Eric.
I was a sport boat guy for a very long time. I had friends that had skiffs, and I'd fish on them a lot. But I didn't get a skiff until I was married. So it was 11 years ago. And Matt and I bought this Key West flats boat off some guy in the valley just to fish a break wall with. And like our second or third trip we go out, I went down to practice backing the boat down and stuff so I'd know what to do. And,
so you had no previous?
I fished a lot on skiffs, but I'd never been the boat owner, so I didn't deal with any of that.
Backing boats up, backing trailers up?
No, zero. But I was comfortable enough, so we go out, and I'd had a particularly rough day at work. I was working as a print broker. I had some jobs going South Korea. It was just a really rough day, and I brought like a 12-pack of beer out. I'm like, man, I'm just going to drink today. You guys, you know, we're going to fish, but you're going to have to drive home, all this stuff. We live right by the launch ramp, and he was at my house. So, you know, just drive my truck home. Then, so we get in. He's like, yeah, but you're going to have to put the boner trailer because I don't know how to do it yet. Yeah. I'm like, all right, no problem. Just back the trailer down. So, again, I'm still kind of nervous back then. At South Shores, where we're at, has this big surge thing where the water drops. And I'm like, oh, we're going. I get going in. And I'm like, oh, I'm going way too fast. So I'm like, I got to pull the boat into reverse, and I got to clarify, I was not drinking and boating except for like the last 5 feet from the dock to the trailer. And instead of backing it down, I just punched the thing forward.
Yeah.
And the only thing to stop the bow of the boat from pushing Matt through the back window of my truck was me shearing the entire prop off on the back of the trailer. Yeah, that was really something.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So that was it. I've left the plug out a few times other than that.
It's nice to know, like, after, you know, I dropped my boat off my trailer dinner point, my first one.
Yeah.
And it's like everyone's done something. Bobby Martinez had a great story, same thing, you know. It's nice to hear, you know.
Yeah.
So when someone does get a boat and does some fucking stupid dumbhead move, you know, like, everyone's done it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's I'm sure whoever's listening goes, oh, awesome. I did the same fucking thing.
I actually
thing.
Have a second story. I didn't want to go to share this because I'm sure he's never made a single mistake. So I'm going to tell his story.
I was trying to think of what have I done.
And the light shined down, and we had Jimmy Decker, the boater. Anyway, before one of the tournaments in Dana Point, God, I got two stories. Jesus, this is horrible.
Shoot him out.
The first one in Dana Point, I backed the boat off the trailer. And you have to wear a life jacket that's clipped to the kill switch in the thing. So I was practicing clipping the kill switch to my life jacket while I was sitting there waiting in line because there's 60 boats launching or whatever. I'm like, okay, cool, so I can take it off. So I take the kill switch off and I put it back in, but somehow the clip ends up getting caught on my pant or my shorts somehow, and I don't realize that. So back to boat off the trailer, I'm drifting in the harbor, you know, waiting for Matt to come down. I walk in and go do something. I go to do something, the boat dies. I'm like, oh, crap. So I go to start the boat. I'm like, oh, God, what's happening?
Yeah.
And I'm like freaking out. So I get on a trolling motor. So I pull up, and James Shamlin, Eric's partner at the time, he was a boat mechanic. And I'm like, dude, the boat won't start. I don't know. And the whole time, this thing's hitting me. Like, what is this? It's like brushing against my leg, like a spider web or something. And as I'm on the phone, I look down, and I see the kill switch dangling off my shorts.
Never mind. I fixed it.
Yeah. But, you know, another tournament story. Newport Harbor, pitch black, that dune's launch ramp, 70 or 80 boats, one of the real big fields they had. I back the boat off the trailer. I go to spin the wheel really hard, and I got a rod holder with a rod with a DD-22 crankbait. Mm-hmm. And when I spin the wheel, I bury that crankbait all the way up to the weld into my palm.
Oh, shit.
And I'm trying to jockey the boat, and I can't get the rod stuck to another rod that's got a hook caught on that in the other rod holder.
Yeah.
So I can't pull the rod out of the thing. So I'm trying to get it loose, and there's other boats. The guys are honking at me and yelling at me because I'm drifting sideways through the thing. So I reach over. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I can't reach pliers. I'm stuck on this hook. I don't know how bad it is. It's pitch black. I just rip it out. And I go, back the boat off the trailer, or, you know, get the boat square in, Matt comes down, he's got like a headlight to rig up baits, he turns around, he's like, what the hell just happened here? The entire boat is covered
CSI.
In blood. It's pouring out of my hand. It just, I'm surprised I didn't bleed out that day. It was like the worst, because it just ripped everything out with it. I was just like, yeah, well, God. That's fishing.
You know? Wrap it up and get going, huh?
I did think of something that I've done. It took me this long. I was dumping Tracy, and Tracy's my wife, and she's the boat driver.
Uh-huh.
We'll say that. So I was dumping her in at Dana, and I didn't take the straps off the back that holds the transom to the trailer. You know, and I'd always roll it back, and she'd fire it up, and then I'd hit the brake and fucking shove her off, you know. And, okay, we're good. And I'd roll back, boom, hit the brake. Oh, fuck, what's going on? Boom, boom. Okay, hold on, man. Trim it up a little bit. And I pull up, and I roll back. Doom, I hit the brake. Fucking idiot. Should have figured it out within five times. I pull the boat out. Those fucking straps were so fucking tight. I had to cut them with my fillet knife. I had to cut both the straps with my fillet knife because there was no way I could get loosen that little thing to pop up and chop it off. And so
I bet, and because you, like, I have an aluminum boat, 17 foot, so I can get that and fucking pull it up.
Right.
But with a heavier boat like that, you can't get
I had the strap, the front loose. It was the two in the back.
Yeah.
You didn't have it at all anymore.
Yeah. No, that was the bad one. That was probably my most boner at the ramp.
Yeah, you know, it's all part of learning. None of us are experts.
Everybody when we start does out.
Yeah.
You know, I still have problems sometimes. You know, it's we Matt and I recently forgot to take the straps off. You know, you have a routine, and if somebody does something wrong,
yeah, throws you out of it, yeah, heaven forbid.
And then suddenly everything goes to shit.
Eric and I are freaks about, you know, we only get in on our boats on a certain side.
Yeah.
You know, I'll never get on my boat on the starboard side. I always get in on the port side, like out of the car, into the boat. You know,
I'll never step over the tongue.
Yeah. I'll never step over the tongue of my boat. I'll walk around the front of my truck or around the back.
Yeah.
You get in those little weird things, and if anything goes off, it's like, hold on, what just happened?
Yeah, the time I forgot to put the plug in my boat and almost sank it. On my old boat, we used to take the plug out. My new boat, I don't, because I'll pump the bilge out when I'm on the ramp.
It's
a very dry boat. We had a toolbox that had the wrench and the thing in it that when I would get ready to go fishing, I would take the toolbox and I would set it on the back deck and I would open it.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't put the plug in right away. I would just do that, and then, because the toolbox was in the garage, so once the plug was in, it would be closed to put in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, Matt walked up and closed the toolbox, put it in the boat, without thinking that, hey, there's no plug in the boat. And so we launched, everything's fine. We're fishing Alamos Bay. We ran back under that bridge by PCH or whatever there.
Oh, yeah.
And we're fishing, and the motor, which I have running,
it's getting kind of low.
The motor was peeing, and it sounded different. I'm pretty deaf, but it's the water coming out of the motors, and I thought maybe I sucked up some grass. Some I looked back, and there's water just dripping over the transom. I'm like, is it plug in? He's all, I don't. I'm like, oh God. So I'm like, there's nowhere to beach. It's just rocks there, and I don't know if this boat's gonna just sink like a rock or what. So I got to sing up on plane going 30 miles an hour through Alamitos Bay, right across to the beach, across from Launcher at their mother's beach or whatever that is.
Yeah.
Right up on the sand.
Oh, fuck.
And pump all that water out. The lifeguard came over. He's going, wait, what are you guys doing? I'm like, oh, the boat was sinking. We're about to put the plug in. Oh, okay, I've done that, you know. So it's just, you know, rookie mistake.
Yeah, dude. I heard a couple. Joe had the same story from performance. He ran his boat. Same thing.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
You know.
Definitely.
But I sheared, sometimes stuff will happen. I sheared my, fishing at Mission Bay in a tournament. We were coming out of the harbor, and it was rough.
Yeah.
And my boat slammed down, and it broke the inflow from where it goes from the bait pump to the tank.
Nice.
It's up.
Oh, shit.
And,
bring me my tacos, motherfucker.
We got people coming in. And we had so much water coming what's up, buddy? That I couldn't, the boat was sinking, the bilge pump burned out or hadn't been working, so I had to turn around and drive through Mission Bay on full plane the whole way to the launch ramp to not sink my boat. And of course, the cops, the harbor police, ended up coming in like 5 minutes later.
Yeah,
but you know, that's what you got to do. It's better than sinking your boat. So,
are you doing the next show? Are you number two? Are you coming in after us?
Oh, Benny's coming inside.
So Benny Florentino?
No,
Seacrest. Oh. Oh, even better.
Jesus.
Wow, another celebrity.
So he's like, I'm in your neighborhood, bitch. Get over here.
Nice, that's cool. Nice. You guys are cranking them out today, huh? Production.
We're fouling up your production here. You got the clips of this.
Oh, man.
Anyway, you edit this together when we don't talk, right?
No, it just rolls.
Oh, it just rolls.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
that's fine.
It's live.
We're good.
Yeah, okay.
Do it
yeah.
fucking Beautiful. Live.
It's a train wreck. Anytime good, yeah. me and Decker piss or a podcast, shouldn't be any different.
No, it'll be exactly the same.
But so I'm figuring maybe if you guys want to do like a talk a little bit with Ben when he comes in, we can sure. kind of shoot the shit a little bit.
Well,
and then we'll
all
do
we're going to talk about is how great Ben is.
You know, I'll tell you what, he's one of the guys who got great. The whole thing started. If nothing else, that's definitely something he's
yeah,
going for.
Yeah, him and Stokesbury really kicked off the whole Calico Bass deal. I mean, they weren't really doing it like we do, but they were doing it, you know. They were still getting them on the iron, but they were fishing a lot of mackerel, a lot of Spanish.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of shit like that. I mean, how do you weigh 40 pounds in a tournament if you're not fishing yeah. Spanish, you know, fishing the beach?
Fuck.
But, I mean, they're good, and they really had it dialed in that late 80s, early 90s
yeah.
deal when they were kicking it off, when the shorts were barely 1/16th of an inch below the tip of your penis.
Yeah.
You get some really good pictures of those, too, of those.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? We're going to close this one up and get ready for the next one.
Okay.
Jimmy, is
thank
there
you.
Anything? Hey, thank you guys for coming. We appreciate
no
it.
No sweat. Anytime.
You know, we're fucking couple nobodies that just tried to do something cool, and
it's
we
nice.
Appreciate you guys taking the time to come
yeah,
down.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to
didn't
do it.
Didn't talk you know? Too much about fishing, but
well,
we
I heard
had a good
you guys
time.
Had some kind of deal where you're going fishing with people now at some point.
We did
oh,
one with
come
Jeff,
out with us.
We did yeah. one with Jeff Leveson. So we changed it. I did 8 minutes at first, the video, but it's fucking a lot to do the podcast and the video. So now I'm doing 1 minute Instagram video. So we did the first one with Jeff doing cranks. And did well. I fucked up filming, of course. So, but we just did one with Seth and Joe doing
yeah.
Freshwater and do a minute long. Pretty much what we're trying to do is you take your favorite technique, you break it down in a minute.
Yeah.
So, say you like fishing jerkbaits. I fish jerkbaits. I use this line, I use this rod. This
right.
is how I work it. And then I edit the video in with the audio like we're talking
oh,
about.
Oh, that's cool.
But I want to do it at different spots. So, like, me and Jeff did it on the water. Seth came here and did it. Joe, I'll do it at Performance.
Well,
say we
just,
do it with Gary, we'll go do it at Puffy Taco. You know, like somewhere.
Right.
We'll go to different spots, a bar.
Well, why
or
don't you guys both just go fishing with us one day or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we'd love to, man.
That would be
yeah,
hot.
Yeah,
plenty
now,
of
we
room on my
some,
shift.
Yeah, we fish all the time, so anytime you're welcome
yeah,
to come.
We appreciate it.
That.
But if you guys have anything, well, I'm not going to ask you what tackle shop you guys go to because you probably
I fish local. I only shop local.
And what shop do you go to?
I go to mostly to Performance.
Okay. Is there any other one you go to?
JD's Big Game on Balboa Island for my mm-hmm. offshore stuff, and then Save on Tackle occasionally.
Okay.
Performance is probably my, you know, Mark's a good guy. Joe's a good guy. I mean, I buy some stuff off Tackle Warehouse only because they give it to me so cheap. It's hard because a lot of shops don't carry what you
yeah.
you know, it's hard for those shops to carry all that product. But if it's something that I can buy local, I'll always buy it local. Angler
awesome.
Center, you know, support your local tackle shop or there won't be any.
Is yeah,
pretty
that's,
much the
and
way
that's
I
what
say.
We're trying to pump. Same thing.
I haven't been to a tackle store in quite a while, but if I were to go, I'd go and buy stuff from Mark. He's a good guy, and I've...
Yeah.
Known him forever.
Longfin's a nice
hard.
Shop. He carries
yeah.
all, you know, he
yeah,
carries
really,
Corey's
really
stuff.
Nice
he's
too.
He's very well stocked, too,
yeah.
from, you know, bluegill to blue marlin, pretty much at that shop. You can pretty much get anything you need there.
Just don't talk to Mark too long. He'll talk your off
bore you
stuff.
To death.
What?
Yeah. Tell you how you can do stuff better.
Any sponsors you want to pump? Anything
Abu
like
Garcia.
That?
I mean, I've been with them almost 17, 18 years, so I'm pretty stoked on that one. You
That's
know?
One I'm going to back you. I have all Abu reels, so
thank
I'm,
you. If you
I'm
ever need
it.
If you need anything, let me know. Man.
I appreciate
I got
that.
The hookup.
Thank you.
I got the hookup. You know?
Do any other companies you want to?
I'm pretty much only with the Pure Fishing Group, which is you know Abu Garcia, Penn, Fenwick, Spiderwire, Berkeley. That's pretty much the only products that I fish.
Awesome.
It's not just because I'm under contract to them. It's just they make a really good product, you know.
And what about you, Eric?
Yeah, you know.
He's a whore.
A laundry list. Well, Navionics, obviously.
He's on the bro staff. You're Abu Garcia.
Yeah, Abu Garcia. Yeah, Pure Fishing.
Did you say the bro staff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's basically
just a bunch of friends, you know. And that's,
it's the bro staff,
and
not the
I'm
going to
say
staff.
One thing in closing this podcast for everybody listening. It's not about what you know. It's not about what you do on Instagram. It's not about any of that stuff. It's about the relationships you have with people in the industry.
Amen.
Because everything I've gotten has been through relationships. Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of the relationships start as friendships. Batson Enterprise, which makes rain shadow rods, Alps components. That's a big supporter of ours. Mm-hmm. MC Swim Baits, Corey Sannon, a friend more than a sponsor.
Yeah.
Navionics, Pure Fishing, Gray Marine.
All that.
Costa Sunglasses.
Yeah, who's on there now?
I'm sure.
Don't burn your bridges, AFCO. Man. Yeah,
yeah.
AFCO's another great, great company.
Definitely.
I don't even remember them all. Thanks to everybody.
The thing that you got to remember in the industry is it's very small and very tight knit. You know, you can't be the head Shimano guy 1 year and get the can and then come over to Abu going, oh, now Abu's the greatest reel I've ever fished. Yeah. You know. You know, brand loyalty speaks volumes to these guys.
Okay.
And the guys jumping friends, around, yeah. You know, it's hard.
Definitely.
Sorry, yeah. We're not ending, but go ahead, we'll end
now.
No,
it's a happy ending.
So, yeah.
Must be another story.
We're probably going to do one with Ben, and then we're going to probably have one where we just shoot the shit right now with everyone. I think it'd be cool to get you guys just to maybe tell a story each, like everyone that's here.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm a lot of fishing legends. I'm in no hurry.
We'll see what his time looks like. Because if he has a couple hours and we can do a quick little like half-hour podcast, maybe like for Christmas, do an extra podcast.
Right.
That'd be great.
And we're actually going to do a giveaway, guys. So we're going to do Justin's, one of his drawings.
Those are beautiful, by the way. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Those are lovely prints.
And then Black Tide came in and gave us some shirts we're going to give away. And then Fish Head Underspin gave us some lures. So we're going to do like
I got a Revo Beast 40 that I will give away for your podcast.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I don't have it with me, but I'll PO it up here to you in the next after I get home. I'll ship it out on Monday to you.
So yeah, we want to do it for Christmas.
And you'll have
like
it here.
A cool Christmas to tell everyone we appreciate them listening and they're, you know, this
throwing
is what
any
we're
baits
doing.
Down, bitch.
Oh, dude, I don't want to make it too big, man. I might keep some of this shit, you know.
Yeah, Gary's not
I got I got picked up for another year, so I have a couple reels hanging in the back, and they give them to me for field testing and for grassroots. So
awesome.
This is
yeah.
I would
about
offer to build a rod
as
for some of them. I'm fixing all Decker's broken rods currently. So.
All right, guys, listen to the next one with Ben. I'm not sure how this is going to get released, but we'll have a couple more really good ones. All right, thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you.